Welcome to the Sons of Technology Clubhouse. Ditch your fear at the door, take a risk, and enjoy the ride. With your hosts, Joe Marquez and Kyle Anderson.
Welcome, everybody, to another fantastic episode of the podcast by the Sons of Technology. We have a really fun episode for you today because Kyle and I are going to talk a little bit about the classroom of the future. That's my reverberating voice there, Kyle. Because when we were young, they would always, one of the big things was like the smart home, the home of the future. This is the way your home is going to look. This is the way all the things that are going to be automated and this and that. And some of that has come to pass, some of it has not. And I thought it would be great, especially after this time of pandemic where innovation has been the key to success in engaging students, I thought it would be fun if we would think about the future of education. So if we were asked by a Hollywood studio, we're doing a video, we're doing a movie about a school in 2040, so 19 years, 20 years from now, what would the classroom look like? And no holds barred. So the technology doesn't have to exist today. Let's imagine privacy laws are intact. Let's imagine anything that's happening is kept intact in the school, so you're not getting any privacy laws outside the school. What would school look like? So I think today is going to be a really, really fun episode for us to play around with what we know is happening and what we think it will look like in the long run in the future. But before we do, let's go ahead and introduce ourselves. So I am Joe Marquez. I am the Director of Academic Innovation for Q. I am a former eighth grade science teacher out of the Clovis area of California, and as always, a lifelong learner. And my partner in innovation, Kyle Anderson. Kyle, please introduce yourself.
Hello once again, everybody. Or if you're a first-time listener, hello for the first time. I am Kyle Anderson. I am a special education teacher out of Las Vegas, Nevada. And you can find me on Twitter at AndersonEdTech. Same thing with my Instagram account. I have a blog of the same name, AndersonEdTech.net. And then I'm also the author of a book titled To the Edge, Successes and Failures Through Risk-Taking. You can find that on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and also through my publisher, EduMatch Publishing. So now, Joe, when you suggested that we do this topic, I got really excited because while not a huge, huge fan of science fiction, I mean, I love my Star Wars and I can dabble a little bit into Star Trek and a handful of other science fiction related movies and television shows and whatnot. This is really like almost like real life science fiction for us, where we can kind of speculate and dream up what we want to do with schools for the future 20 some years from now. And some of it is going to be very attainable, and some of it I think is going to be super far-fetched, but it's going to be fun nonetheless.
Well, yeah, I mean, most things that exist today are because you had these far-fetched ideas from individuals. Like, think about the first cell phone, right? The first cell phone was created by Motorola. And if you look at the Motorola logo, it's just two Star Trek logos mirrored on each other. And because they got the idea from the tricorder from Star Trek. And so that idea that you can talk to somebody without a wire, without something connecting, something that's wireless, started in science fiction and became science fact because somebody said, I wonder if we can do that. And we have lived through innovation in these past 10 years in the classroom with technology. I mean, I was saying a while ago that imagine if this pandemic happened 10 years ago, right? Imagine if it happened in 2010. We would be so far lost that it's ridiculous. You wouldn't have devices in every student's home. You wouldn't be able to have a collaborative environment. You didn't have the Zooms or the Google Meets or anything like that. None of that existed. It'd basically be like March of the Penguins with papers moving back and forth, shuffling from one place to the next. But because of the technology, we were able to do a virtual classroom, not the same, right? But in a way that's still engaged and still informed and still kept the learning going. So knowing how far we've come in 10 years, I'm thinking in 20 years, it has to be amplified much more. Now, you know, we live in a time right now, Kyle, where we have in our houses little assistants that will do some things for us. Like we can ask them to set a timer for us. We can ask them to set a reminder for us. We can ask them to even change the color of our lights. Like I have these lights behind me and all I have to do is say, Alexa, turn the lights orange and it will change my lights for me with me just saying it. I mean, that is crazy. Now, if you're listening to this on our podcast audio platform, you didn't see what happened behind me. I had purple lights. I told Alexa to change my lights to orange, and she did. That's what is happening today. That was far-fetched 10 years ago. So what does the classroom look like? So let me tell you, Kyle, my first thought. And again, listeners, because I know this can create anxiety for you. We are protecting student privacy here. Like, so we're imagining that anything that's happening is under extreme security, and all your students' data and privacy and all that information is kept in-house at the school. Nobody else knows about it. So we want to make sure you understand that, because this can get a little bit creepy in some of the things that I say. So my first thing is this. Like, a lot of us have these smartwatches, Kyle. Like, this smartwatch will help me track my steps during the day. It'll tell me when I should drink a glass of water if I haven't had one in the right amount of time. It'll remind me if I need to do my push-ups or sit-ups or squats. It reminds me with little tiny nudges. It'll vibrate, it'll ding, little tiny reminders. So imagine if your smartwatch was connected to your school LMS or your school SIS system. And the smartwatch also automatically connected to your home assistants. So when you wake up, your home assistant says, good morning, Joe. Don't forget, you have a test in algebra today. On the way to school, we're going to go ahead and cover a few of the things that will most likely be on the exam. I mean, it's there for you. So in my future, the learning follows you home. The learning is a constant companion. And the learning is there to kind of prompt you, remind you what you need to do that day, that constant assistant that is next to you. To me, that is something that the future is, it's not only almost here, but if you can connect all of those things, if you can connect your SIS, your LMS to a school issued watch, which can then immediately Bluetooth to your home system, that can be pretty amazing. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much addicted to my smartwatch. I use that to track my steps. I use it to wake myself up in the morning. So, and my watch, it senses my sleep and gives me different feedback on my sleep patterns and whatnot. And one of the things it does, coupled with the alarm on my watch, is that if I have it set for 5 a.m., I actually have it set up called Smart Wake or something along those lines, where it'll sense what stage of sleep I'm in starting at around 4:30, and it'll wake me up in a better stage of sleep versus that deeper stage of sleep where you can wake up very groggy. So I wake up now anywhere between like 4:35 and 4:40 usually instead with that going off. So I'm waking up in a better stage of sleep, and I don't feel groggy when I wake up as a result of that. So now coupling that with education, yeah, having those notifications from like your LMS come there instead, that would be incredible. So I'm actually surprised that Google hasn't set that up with a smartwatch with Google Classroom yet. So now that we say this, maybe somebody from Google's listening, and that's going to be something that's going to be on the next Google Classroom update or something. But and I don't necessarily see that one coming very soon. I think that one's a few years out because there's just so many LMSs and so many different smartwatch companies that are out there that I think it's something that to coordinate everything would take a little bit more, but it's definitely something that would sound really, really cool to have down the road.
Yeah, I think interoperability, that's the term that we're looking for right there. That is something that all schools look for in a lot of their services they purchase. Because you're absolutely right, Kyle. a lot of different products, they have proprietary information that they try to keep in house, and they don't like to play well with others. But I think if you are an ed tech company, you have to play well with others. Your information has to go into the SIS. Your information has to go into the LMS. It has to be interoperable no matter what. And then if a school does go down the path of utilizing a smart assistant, a smart watch, all that information, that API that's used to program all of it, it must be able to funnel into those systems. So you're absolutely right. One of the big holdups, one of the big drawbacks right now is that there are so many companies that have information that they keep only within that company. It doesn't share out to anything else. So I think you're right. Interoperability must increase if some of our ideas are to see a light of day in 2040.
Yeah, I think if my Peloton can automatically post into my Fitbit account whenever I do a ride, I think that's something that down the road can happen with LMSs and whatnot. So now mine is more dealing with video and how you access information in classes and whatnot. So I'm going to take you back to 1993 for a second. So I was 12 years old at the time, and that was the first time I saw a video phone. I was at this event at my local community college on a school field trip, and I ran into my cousin there, who I didn't get to see that often, and it was really nice to run into him. And I remember the most random things, so here you go. This is one of those random things. But one of the things that we saw there was a video phone. It was something that was in development very early, not anything you could necessarily go to the store and buy yet, but here it was. He went to one phone that was in one room, and I went to another one, and then he dialed the number to the phone that I was at, and we saw static images of each other that would refresh every like 5 to 7 seconds, and we thought that was the coolest thing ever. And we're like, this is the future, this is so amazing. So you know, fast forward even to the year 2000, you still didn't really have that. It wasn't really until about, like you said, 10 years ago where video chat really was something that was accessible to everybody, whether it was FaceTime or if it was like Facebook I believe there was a Facebook video chat or something like that at the time. I can't even remember it. Like the only one that's coming to mind really is FaceTime at this point. So now, fast forward to now, you have all these different ones like FaceTime, you've got Skype, you've got, why am I drawing a blank right now?
Marco Polo.
Google Meet. You got Marco Polo that you and I use on a regular basis. So you've got all these different video chat tools and video conferencing tools that are available for low to no cost for just about anybody. And that's great. You can do that on a phone. You can do that on a tablet, on a computer screen. You can cast that onto a TV, whether it's through an HDMI cable or some other device, whatever it may be. But now, this may be one of the far-fetched ones, but thinking ahead a few more years, we might start seeing hologram technology being something that is accessible in the classroom, where now you've got these like concerts. You can go see a Michael Jackson hologram concert. At least you could a few years ago before COVID, where you could see a hologram of Michael Jackson. So, and I always think about R2-D2 and his capabilities to cast images of people talking, like, Leia, help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope. So why can't we do that in the classroom? So what I see in the future is that a student could be at home, they could be anywhere, and then they could tune into either a live or a recorded video from their teacher, but see them as a hologram, like in like 3D form, versus just that image that's on the screen like you would in Google Meet or Zoom or Microsoft Teams or something right now. So again, it's something that's kind of far-fetched. I think it's going to be a few years and the price point's going to be very high when it starts, but I definitely see that being something in the future that'll be accessible to educators and students.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, the price point is always high at the beginning of something, right? And then when it becomes adopted and you can mass produce it, it becomes cheaper. I mean, we saw that with DVD players and Blu-ray players, CD players when they were a thing. And that's just what happens, right? So I think you're absolutely right. I remember when I was in eighth grade, maybe. It was in the mid-90s, and there was an arcade. Do you remember those things? Arcades, you go and play actual games and the consoles. But there was an arcade game that was three-dimensional. And so they used mirrors, and it was like a cowboy game. And it had actual actors, and you can control the actual actors. And it came up from the middle of the game itself. It was very futuristic. And I'm picturing that at a larger scale for your teacher coming in, kind of like this crystal mirror thing where they can actually speak. So I can imagine that, right? Now, whether the students would want to invite their teacher into their room like that is another story. But I can see that actually happening. So that's a really good idea. You know, one of the things that I was thinking about is this idea of personalized learning versus personal learning. And those are two very different things. And there's a lot of companies out there that help to create personalized paths. So based upon student information and based upon students' ability, they can create a path that can build up their skill level to reach a level of competence that is needed there. Personalized learning companies out there are doing a lot of work currently to allow for this integrated, flexible, personalized learning path. But personal learning is very different. Now, you can create a question type based upon skill level, but if you can create a question type based upon student likes or dislikes, that can even create more engagement within the question itself. For example, if you know a student likes Harry Potter, you should incorporate Harry Potter into some of your question types. But if you're a teacher, creating a question type for every different student in your classroom could be very daunting, a very daunting task. But imagine if a computer could do it. Imagine if at the very beginning of the year, students took like a survey. What do you like? Who's your favorite baseball team? Who's your favorite actor? Who's your favorite band? Who's your favorite this? What's your favorite book? And it takes that personal information, incorporates personalized information, and creates question types tiered towards that individual student rather than just a random question type for just any student, right? Now, these kinds of things are done to us on a daily basis. Whenever we're searching on Google, Google identifies what you're searching for and you start getting ads for what you're looking for. Whenever you talk in your house and you have one of those personal assistants, they're constantly listening to you. And so then you go to your computer and start, if you're looking for a washing machine, you tell your wife, you know what, we have to look for another washing machine. And you go to your computer and there's ads for washing machines. You're like, oh, wow. Wow, it's serendipitous. Maybe we should really buy a washing machine. No, your stuff is listening to you always. Your cell phones, your personal assistants, your smartwatches. So now imagine, Kyle, now again, those of you listening, we're imagining that all of this personal information stays within the school. So it's not going and being sold to advertisers or anything. But imagine if a school issued smartwatch is constantly listening to the students and they know they like Pokemon. They listen to them talking about their favorite band is Disturbed. They know their favorite movies are the Harry Potter series or the Hunger Games series. And without the teacher doing anything, because the smartwatch is connected to the SIS, connected to the LMS, connected to all the different things that you are using, now the personalized learning creates personal questions based upon the watch listening to you. Now, again, that could sound a little bit like Big Brother. It could sound a little bit crazy thinking, oh man, it's listening all the time. But we have to understand it's listening all the time right now as we speak. So why not listen all the time, but create a positive out of it by increasing that personal learning as part of the personalized learning? Right, Kyle, what do you think about when you hear me say something like that?
I'm going to just be honest with you. I'm not sure I like that one because, like you said, with the whole Big Brother-ish thing, I can 100% get behind people being concerned with that whole deal. And when it comes to all those devices listening, I feel like sometimes it's almost like sometimes I'll just think about something, not even say it, and then I'll see the ads. It's just, it's kind of spooky sometimes how that works out. What I also have concerns with regarding it is that it's almost taking the easy way out and not really getting to know kids. So you mentioned like the watch would hear them talk about Pokemon. Now you go, oh, now they know they like Pokemon. So I'm going to write some questions in that regard. And to me, it's almost like you're not building the relationship at that point where you're actually talking to the kids and getting to know them in like just the one-on-one personal sense. So I'm not saying I'm full 100% against the whole idea, but I definitely have right now I have reservations in regards to it. But who knows where we're going to be in 20 years. The technology is going to be way different. And when it comes to privacy, and I know that was one of the stipulations, we're not worrying about that. But, you know, just looking at it on the surface, I know that's definitely a concern.
No, absolutely. Privacy is big. I mean, like in California, the state issued like a ban on facial recognition, right, in public, right? And that would be another thing I would imagine a school could do if privacy wasn't an issue. You have cameras on campus and it identifies a student is present or it identifies if a student has left, right? And to keep students safe and keep track of where students are. But again, when you hear stuff like that, automatically think, oh, Big Brother, privacy issues, all these things. And so, you know, the hope would be, you know, these are only implemented when privacy is secure and only the people who need to know the information knows the information. And I'm so glad, Kyle, that you brought up, you know, the idea that teachers need to understand students on a personal level as well. Don't rely on computers to do that, right? And so in my mind, and I'm glad you said that because it didn't come out, in my mind, I'm imagining this teacher does the exact same thing they do, get to know the student, get to understand who they are and banter back and forth. But then the computer is the one that does the questions and stuff for you. So in my mind, it was the teacher is given more time to connect with the students and letting the computer algorithms do the mediation work rather than the teacher. But I hear you about, you know, could that cause teachers to stop really connecting with their kids, right? Could that? And that could, it could be kind of this negative feedback that could happen with it. So I'm glad you brought that up because I didn't even think about that when I was talking about it.
Well, and you mentioned the facial recognition software and how that could be an issue too with privacy and everything, but I'm actually going to flip that coin real quick and think about it as being technology that could enhance school safety, where if you've got the facial recognition software that can identify teachers, staff, students on campus, and then when somebody comes into school, a parent or another visitor of sorts, they scan at the beginning and then they're cleared when they come in, say, yes, this person being on campus, it's okay. All of a sudden, if you have somebody that's on campus that did not get that clearance or whatever, that can sound the alarm to any sort of campus security that, hey, we've got somebody here that, you know, did not get cleared. And I'll bring up an example from a few years ago, school I was working at, we had a woman from the neighborhood that was high on meth who came to our school with a sledgehammer and walked in through an open door and was wildly swinging this sledgehammer and ended up breaking a window. And luckily nobody got hurt and school police were on it within a minute minimum or maximum and got it taken care of. But I mean, who knows if that could have happened quicker, if there was some sort of facial recognition that could have prevented that kind of damage from happening.
Yeah, I mean, there's pluses and minuses to all of this. And that's why, like, in our ideas here is we're trying to amplify the pluses from the minuses. And that's something that could work, right? Like, something that I was thinking about going on the lines of automation and facial recognition and AI and personal assistance, we're bringing everything together here, is what about, like, we hear about Tesla all the time. Tesla is actually amplifying their automated trucking services here relatively shortly. Like, they're letting the semi trucks drive themselves, which is very crazy. Imagine if school buses did that, right? So imagine if you have a school bus now that is on a dedicated route, dedicated stopping arena. And instead of needing to pay bus drivers, and if you're a bus driver listening to this, God bless you for listening to this podcast. And I'm not trying to scare you, but imagine if a bus driver wasn't needed and instead they were able to pay tutors to get on the buses with the students going to school. And some of you may be saying, well, bus rides, how long are bus rides? Well, here in the area I live in California, some of the bus rides are like an hour long because you have to, if they're the first pickup and you have to go around all to everybody before you go to school, it's about an hour long. So imagine if they tiered the pickup system to students who need extra help and they pick them up first. You have a tutor on the bus working with the student while they're getting to school and you're getting there. And then you're getting that extra help, right? Or imagine, okay, let's say there is a bus driver that doesn't really have to do anything, but they can just monitor and make sure the students are behaving themselves. But their smartwatch follows them onto the bus. They sit in their seat. That smartwatch connects to a monitor, just like in an airplane, like the monitor right in front of you. And it says, hello, Kyle. I notice you're having a difficult time in geometry. Let's go over a few of the concepts that you need to be helped with. And you're sitting there and you're watching this automated tutor go through the skills that you may need. Now, I'm not saying the students are going to be paying attention to this, right? But at least it gets that little bit of extra help on the bus ride to the school. So it's you're connecting the smartwatch to the tutor, to all of these things. Could you picture something like that being something that could happen?
Well, the first thing I'm picturing is the movie Starship Troopers, where would you like to know more? That's what I'm picturing to start. But this is something that, yeah, I definitely could see that being useful and feasible, where, again, because our technology with driving is starting to shift now with autonomous driving and, you know, Tesla with the trucks, and then there's autonomous cars that are out there, and you're starting to see this more and more. I don't think I've ever seen it in person yet, but you're starting to hear more about it. So if you can do that, there's still going to be jobs available, just not necessarily as bus drivers. There's going to be tons of jobs for mechanics for those buses, people to work on those buses whenever there's issues. But yeah, having somebody on the bus as a tutor or even a licensed teacher, that's part of their contracted day where they work with students in kind of like a bus ride home study hall kind of deal or something like that. That's definitely something I could see happening. And you know, with the buses, you're starting to see some districts that are already starting to do this where they have Wi-Fi on the buses. And I'm drawing a blank on the gentleman's name, the superintendent for the district around the Salton Sea, where a few years ago he knew that 98% of the students in his district did not have Wi-Fi at home. So he had Wi-Fi installed on the buses, and then they went and parked the buses in the neighborhoods so the kids could have Wi-Fi. And I just see that if it's not already happening some places, definitely in the next few years, you're going to see Wi-Fi on all the school buses for sure. And that's something that I think that's something that every kid needs Wi-Fi, and why not have it on the buses so they can get something done on the way home or on the way to school?
No, I agree 100%. And as you're talking, I'm picturing the long bus rides that I had in high school when I played football, right? Because you're not playing just in your local area. You're driving, you know, an hour, 2 hours across California to get to different places that you're playing. And you're getting pulled out of school to be on that bus to be driving. Now, some coaches listening, like, no, they got to get in the game mode and they have to. But imagine if they had extra tutoring help, or they notice, oh, you know what, this student is if they don't get a good grade on this exam, they're not going to be eligible to play. And so we're going to ensure that they get that help on that bus trip all the way through. Right. And so you have this differentiation on the bus while you're traveling. And yes, when I was on the bus, we had, you know, the students that would, you know, put on their headsets and get it in the game, but come on, that's a two hour bus ride. You didn't really have to get in to a game mindset until after you got dressed, after your coach gave you your speech, and you were 20 minutes until you had to run through the student made paper banner, right? You didn't need that much hype. So let them learn a little bit as they're going. Or if the students have to take the bus home and it's an hour long trip, why not utilize the bus as a time to help remediate some of these things than just to have it as a, you know, an hour of just driving home. So these are things that I've been thinking about. Like, we have some of these capabilities. We just have to be able to make sure things are connected enough to make it possible. So that's what I was thinking about when you were talking about those things.
Now, shifting gears a little bit, something I was thinking about during this time, I was thinking back to my master's program for special education that I did through Western Governors University. And Western Governors is unique in the fact that, first of all, it was all online. I didn't have any in-person instruction at all, and it was very self-paced. But the program was competency-based, and what that means is that instead of having a class start on, say, September 1, and then you have until December 15th to go through the material, do all the assignments, take the exam, whatever it may be for that class, you start a class, you do one class at a time. So you may start on September 1. If you get in the material and 2 days later realize, you know what, I pretty much know all this stuff. In my case, that the first class I took, Introduction to Special Education, that's kind of the way I felt. So I requested the final exam for that class 2 days in. I took that exam, and on day three, the morning I woke up, I had a notification. Congratulations, you passed this class. Move on to your next one. So then I took the next class, and that class took me maybe a week. So there were a couple classes that down the road I had to put a little bit more work into, and it took me, say, maybe 3 weeks, but I basically completed 31 credits of a master's program in a span of 11 months because I was able to do everything at my own pace. And again, some of them I did in as little as 3 days. Some it took me 3 weeks, but it gave me the flexibility of when to work and what to work on, et cetera, et cetera. Now, granted, it also helped that I was assigned a coach, a university professor that was my mentor, that would call and check in with me, say, hey, how you doing on this? What can I help you with right now? And I was pretty easy going, and I'm like, hey, I'm good. You know, I know what's going on here. And I think for somebody that maybe struggles with online learning or maybe was a newer teacher, it may have been a little bit, the coach may have been a little bit more of an assistance. And not that my coach wasn't a help, I just didn't need to rely on that coach as much as somebody else may. But now that's higher ed. And anything that we've learned from this past year with COVID and whatnot is that online ed is really the future. So, and we're seeing that a lot of universities realize that it can be done. And now a lot of those universities are struggling because students don't want to return to campus. And that's where they're making a lot of their money, is students that are on campus living in the dorms and having to pay for meal plans and different things. But I'm seeing in the future not only more online classes and online degree programs from not just your traditional online schools like Western Governors or University of Phoenix, but we're talking about your standard state schools, I think are going to have more online programs. And then I think what's going to happen too is that you're going to see that more universities are going to go more towards that competency base, pass-fail versus this A, B, C, D, F grade scale, and giving students the option to either take the class over the course of, say, 3 months, like a traditional semester, or doing it like I did with Western Governors, where you do it at your own pace, and when you're ready to take the final exam, you request to take the final exam. So whether that happens in the next year or two, or it's going to take the full 20, I can't speculate on that, but I definitely see higher ed especially shifting as a result of that. And once higher ed starts to shift like that, I think you're going to start to see that in high schools as well, where, I mean, we already have online courses for high school students, and a lot of times for credit retrieval. But I worked with a program of students in Carson City where they were taking their classes online, and they typically got 3 weeks to finish a class. But like, I had a couple high flyers that would burn through a 3 week class in a week and then be able to move on to the next one. So I think we're gonna start seeing that more even with high school in the coming years as well, especially because after COVID, a lot of kids realized, you know what, this online thing, this wasn't bad. And I mean, my school for next year, we've already got a program lined up where we're gonna have up like two, like 350 kids strictly online, so that we so they can do their classes online, and that's going to help them because they're successful in the online platform. And then my school is 3,500 students. If we can get 350 kids off campus, still getting their education, that's going to alleviate a lot of crowding issues. It's going to alleviate maybe some sort of problems or maybe in the hallways or the cafeteria, whatever, that many people. So it's going to be nothing but good, in my opinion.
Well, to me, that's a callback to one of our very earliest episodes on classroom crowding and solutions. And one of the solutions we had was, why not see if any students want to learn in a virtual environment? They're still part of your school, but they learn virtually, right? And you know, a lot of people kind of are like, no, that would never happen. And then the pandemic happened. We're like, now it's happening, right? And I think we're discovering, right? We always talk about differentiation, right? We always say, you know, we should get rid of standardized tests because all students are different and we shouldn't standardize them and all this stuff. So why are we standardizing how to learn? Why are we standardizing you have to be at school 5 days a week in a structured schedule in order to learn? So it's not that we should differentiate only the instruction. We should also differentiate how and when the instruction occurs. Because just like you proved, Kyle, some of our students learn faster than others and they shouldn't be held back because of it. And I've been really getting into, I just bought HBO Max. I love it. So if you're listening to this and you're looking for the next thing after Netflix, HBO Max is a thing to buy. And on HBO Max, I discovered this show called Young Sheldon. And it's this like prequel to The Big Bang Theory. And this Sheldon character, he is in high school at 10 years old. And he is wanting to go to college now because he's passed all the high school courses. And they're saying, you can't go to college. You're too young. Now, is that what we tell our students? You can't move on to the next grade. You're too young. Or is it, oh, wait a minute. You've actually achieved everything we wanted you to achieve in this grade. So go ahead and move on. Can't we flex it a little bit like college? Can't we flex it a little bit like your experience in your master's program? When they achieved what is needed in that course, they should be able to move on now, not later, now. And we shouldn't have grade levels based upon age levels. We should have grade levels based upon aptitude. Because conversely, how many times do we move a student forward in a grade level? We know they shouldn't move forward, but we're like, you can't have a 13-year-old as a sixth grader. You have to move them on. How many times do we hurt students because of our mentalities rather than help them? And so when you were talking, Kyle, about I got through 3 days of this one course and said, I'm ready for the final. Let me have it. What if they told you no? You have to still go through all the hoops and the this's and the that's. You're going to get a bad taste in your mouth and you're going to be like, you know what? I'm an adult and I am good to go. You give me that test. So what about a student who is at the level of, you know what? I just want to take the final exam for this course because I think I can do it. Why not? Why do we have to put them through the hoops and the paces because we think that's the way it should work? How many students are we holding back from progressing faster? And how many students are we moving too far forward when they need to take a little bit more time? So I think you're absolutely right. The future of education needs to change in the approach of the pace of learning, not just how the learning occurs. And so I'm glad you brought that up because this is not only about technology advancements, it's also about mind shifts. And I think the pandemic has showcased for us that the idea of TITWADI, which is this is the way we've always done it, TITWADI is that acronym, is gone. We can now point to this moment in time and say, well, that is not the way we've always done it. Look at how we did it then. Look at how many students prospered. And maybe only 10% did exceptionally well in a virtual environment. But why take that away from those 10%? Why do that? Give the 10% that option. And so I'm absolutely glad that you brought that up because I think that is key. And I think it has been shown to us that it's possible, and we need to make sure we break the cycle of monotony by advancing what we've learned through this pandemic and what you have talked about through the master's program, why not make K-12 education a little bit more like that master's education? Move them on when they're ready, not when they've completed a course, when they're ready, right? What do you think about that, Kyle?
Well, to piggyback that, what I think too is that the pandemic has taught us really truly what's important in regards to the standards. So you have a list of standards for a particular course. So let's say there's 100 standards for a course. Well, hitting 100 standards in this past year has been next to impossible because of the situation. So it's been more of a, for every 10 standards, which two are the most important that absolutely need to be addressed? So I think what you're going to see now too is you're going to see standards that are more concise, and there's going to be fewer of them. And it's going to give teachers the flexibility to be able to spend more time with those particular standards versus like, oh, well, we just spent, you know, a week on the Civil War and whatnot. Now we need to move on. Now, let's say that there are various standards from the Civil War that need to be hit. Now that gives the flexibility to stay with those standards a little bit more. So I always go to the U.S. history mindset because that's my subject area by trade. So what it's also going to do, I think, is it's going to make schools, districts, educational leaders, etc., realize that there are some classes that just aren't necessarily, why are they required? So, and this one I'm going to bring to math. So if you're a math teacher right now, I may be angering you at this point, but right now, why is it that a freshman is required to take algebra? Why is it that a sophomore is required to take geometry? And then in order to graduate from high school, you have to have the higher level algebra as well. And then some schools, maybe even like say pre-calculus. Why is that the case? And if a student is not ready for algebra as a ninth grader, why is it so wrong that they're taking it as a junior instead? So what I think is going to start to happen is, you talked about personalized education earlier. I think that schools are going to have to start to realize that they're going to have to work with students more closely to kind of give them guidance starting early in high school, maybe even middle school, as to what do you want to do later on? What dreams do you have? And then help build an educational program for them based on those ideas. So if a student has no interest whatsoever in going to college and pursuing a degree that's going to require high levels of math like calculus, then why are we pushing kids to take courses that are eventually going to get them to calculus? Why don't we get them into courses that are more feasible like your algebra instead? So I know this is a mind shift that has been ingrained for hundreds of years in American education, but I really truly think the COVID pandemic has really kind of opened the door for a lot of people to realize just how damaging some of these requirements have been. So for me, speaking of math, it wasn't too much of an issue until I hit pre-calculus. And when I got to college, you take that entrance test in math and English when you go to college, and it tells you what courses you should be taking or whatever. It suggested that I take calculus. So why? I'm going to be a social studies teacher. Why do I have to take calculus? So I ended up taking trigonometry because trigonometry was something I enjoyed, and I did well in that class, and that satisfied my math requirement. I didn't have to go on and take calculus, and I really think we need to start looking at that for high school students as well.
Yeah, so I think also you're kind of hitting the spot that I wanted to go to next, and that's making sure the content is relevant now, and never use the term, well, you're going to need to know it in the future. That doesn't matter to the students now. How does it need to be used now? And so I think community assignments are very important. How is there an assignment you can make that's a collaborative assignment that will meet the standards that you can actually benefit the community around you? Can you use the math in the community around you? Can you use the math to create something, to build something, to help someone, right? Can you do that? And I think we get so focused on getting through a textbook that we forget that we as teachers are artists, and it's our job to grab the different pieces of what needs to be learned and create a whole unit that is something the students create or postulate or think about on how to help the world around them. I was talking to my buddy Roland this morning. You know Roland, all the way in Waterloo, Canada. And Roland was talking about how, you know, there's too many times that we are asking students just to know something rather than to grow from something. How are you becoming a better person by knowing this, not just checking off a standards box, right? It's not about knowing, it's about growing. And teachers, you need to put a pin in that right now. How is what you are doing in your class today helping your students grow, not just helping them know something so you can check it off your box? And if you can ask your Google assistant or your Amazon assistant, if you can say, ask a question and they can give you an answer, then it's a bad question to be asking. Facts are free nowadays. Facts are one tweet away, they're one look away, they're one Google away. So we are no longer in the business of disseminating facts. We're in the business of how can these facts help you grow as a human being? How can you become a better member of society? How can you be a better member of your community? How can this learning make you a better person and have a better life? Not how can it get you a B? How can it get you an A? It's how can you be a better person? So I hope the future of education turns into a growth mindset, a true growth mindset. How can you grow as a human being mindset rather than a knowing mindset? Look at all the things I know. Well, I know everything with this phone in my hand. I know everything. I don't know how to answer everything. Because facts don't give you answers. Facts just tell you things. Can you put all that together to create something better? And that's the idea, I think. And I think you've hit it on the head, Kyle. That's the key. We have to get out of the idea of hitting just standards and pushing students becoming better community members now, not later, right?
For sure. So as we're trying to kind of wrap this up now at this point, we've been talking now for quite a while because that's what you and I do. We get together and we talk a lot, so it's always a good time. So I want to throw out there, though, I want to propose this one to you, and I'll share mine first to give you a moment to think about it. But we've been talking about all these things like where we're going to see things in 20 years in education. What's the one thing that you think that either will never happen or it's not going to happen in our lifetime in regards to education? So I'm going to let you stew on that and share mine real quick. I'm going to harken back to an episode of Family Guy for a quick second here, where I believe it was the episode where Stewie goes to the future and discovers his older self. And it's in the future, and there's all this technology has changed and the different things that you can do. And the way he met him was because future Stewie traveled back in time. The technology was there that future Stewie could travel back in time. Well, one of those episodes, there was a part where now in the future, you can just have television beamed into your head. And they'll just scan your eyes and they'll just beam television into your head. And the character that had that happen is watching Mork and Mindy. So, and laughing and having a good time watching Mork and Mindy getting beamed into their head. So probably never will happen, or at least not in our lifetime. Maybe eventually, though, we can just have the information beamed directly into our head by doing a quick scan, and everything you need to know will be right there. You won't even have to Google it at that point. So if I want to learn how to prepare the best smoked tri-tip in the world, I'll just have it beamed into my head, and I'll instantly know how to do it without mistakes. So what's the thing that you think is either never going to happen or it's not going to happen in our lifetime in regards to education?
Well, first off, if you want to know how to make the best tri-tip, all you got to do is ask me. You don't have to have it beamed into your head. I'll tell you. It's so funny that you went down the Family Guy route, because I think the easier route would have been just the Matrix. Right? I know Kung Fu. Right? Just stick that thing in the back of your neck, and now you know Kung Fu. I think the one thing that I would absolutely love that I do not think will come to pass is the holodeck. The holodeck from Star Trek, The Next Generation, where you can go and say, I want to be in this location. And it creates a hologram of all the people and the entire world. That would be a phenomenal learning experience to witness history, to witness things happening that are no longer to pass. I just don't think it's possible. Now you can have like a faux holodeck. I was postulating that windows, LCD windows, could be created with LCDs where the teacher would say, okay, let's take a look. And all the windows around the room would turn into TVs. So you'd kind of have a 360 view of something. But that's not the same thing as a holodeck where you're immersed. Yes, there's VR. You could put on the goggles, but that's really expensive. If you have 36 kids in your class and each goggle costs $4,000, that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. So I think the one thing that I would absolutely love, but I don't think would come to pass, would be a holodeck-esque learning experience in a school.
I like that one. So, and the reason I went down the Family Guy route is because, believe it or not, I've never seen The Matrix. I've never seen any of The Matrix movies. I do know the "Hello, Mr. Anderson" part because I have had that said to me no less than 1,672 times in my life, probably more, but I've never seen The Matrix. That's why I went down the route of Family Guy. So now, if you're...
You have to watch the first one and then pretend like that's it. Don't watch the second or third, but watch the first one and pretend that was the end of it, because that's an amazing movie. Amazing movie.
It came out at a time when I was in college and I was working, I was playing football, I was going to school, and there's a whole slew of movies I did not see around that time that are like, I guess if you want to call something 15, 20 years ago a classic now, that's one of them where I just never saw it because I was just always so busy. So, but for listeners out there, we would love to hear what you think's going to... what education is going to look like in 20 years or what some of your like dream scenarios would be. So you can always hit us up on Twitter at Sons of Technology, my handle at Anderson EdTech, Joe at Joe Marquez 70. Use hashtag EdTech Army when you do that. We'd love to hear some of yours as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's just amazing of what we can think about and possibly make come true. And, you know, fingers crossed, we might actually have some futurists join us in a future episode to see if what we've talked about with some of the AI, some of the interoperability, some of the interworkings, could it be possible? Is there stuff that is in the works that would help this actually come from ideation come to fruition? So we want to know from you. What do you know and what do you think along the way? So Kyle, I thought this was a very fun episode. We've done a lot of really heavy episodes lately and a lot of episodes of this and that. And it's always fun to have one where we can just riff and think and just use our innovative mindsets for the good of education. So I really enjoyed this. I needed this on a Friday leading into the weekend. And everybody listening, you know what? If this is the first time you've heard our podcast, we thank you for joining the EdTech Army. If you are a loyal listener, please share with fellow friends. We love to add more members to changing the world. And we just absolutely love and care about you from the bottom of our hearts. And I've said it once and I'll say it again. Whether it's tomorrow, next week, a year from now, or 10 years from now, you will be regarded, my fellow teachers, as the heroes of this pandemic. Because no matter what, you kept the learning going, the engagement happening, and the students full of knowledge since March of 2020. And you let nothing stand in your way from completing your mission, which is to make sure that you change the world one student at a time. So I'm Joe Marquez with my fellow innovator, Kyle Anderson, saying, keep on ditching that fear and keep on being the most amazing educator you can be. Have yourself a wonderful, wonderful day.